I'm Lauren from Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to Earth 2's favorite newspaper, the Starling Tribune. I am the award-winning chief editor, Stargate Pioneer. My friends call me SP. And your reporters for this episode, this special episode, number 156 of the Starling Tribune, are Chris.
Well, that's neat.
All 12 volumes, right, Chris? And Michelle.
What I do is not up to you.
Oh, gotta give a woman her independence. And then special guest reporter this week, Haley.
That tiny thing tells you what to do.
Yes, yes, that tiny watch tells me what to do.
Watch. Oh, is that what you was talking about? Okay.
That's right. This podcast is recorded on Sunday, June 4th, 2017, live on Geeks.live. Today, we are going to have a spoiler-filled discussion about the 2017 film, DC film, called Wonder Woman. So you have been warned, we are going to be talking spoilers.
That's right. And if you're new to the show, thank you so much for searching us out on the internet and joining us. If you like our content, please feel free to swing by our network home over at GunnaGeek.com, where you can find our entire back catalog of old shows and a ton of other geeky videos, podcasts, and articles that are all under the Gunna Geek Productions banner.
Thanks! And Michelle, I think we're just going to go dive right into it and break down the film.
Sure. Okay. Wonder Woman. The official United States release date was June 2nd, 2017. Directed by Patty Jenkins. Story by Zack Snyder, Alan Heinberg, and Jason Fuchs. Screenplay by Alan Heinberg. Wonder Woman was created by William Moulton Marston. Executive producers John Berg, Wesley Coller, Jeff Johns, Stephen Jones, Stephen Muchin, Rebecca Steele Rovin. Producers, Tommy Gormlin, Chris Kamimoto, Charles Rovin, Deborah Snyder, Stack Snyder, and Richard Seckel. Cinematography by Matthew Jensen. Music by Rupert Gregson-Williams. Editing by Martin Walsh. Runtime, 2 hours, 21 minutes. Rated PG-13. And a reported budget of $150 million. And Haley, why don't you take the main cast for us?
Well, our lead, Diana, Princess of Themyscira, Wonder Woman, was played by Gal Gadot. Our lead male actor, Steve Trevor, played by Chris Pine. Hippolyta, Queen of the Amazons, was Connie Nielsen. Antiope was played by Robin Wright. Ludendorff was played by Danny Houston. Sir Patrick is David Thewlis. Saeed Tagmoi, that's not right, was played by Samir. Oh, wait, I think that's backwards.
Oh, that is backwards. I'm sorry. Samir.
I was like, wait a second.
Shoot. Sorry.
Anyways, Charlie was played by Ewan Bremner. The Chief was played by Eugene Brave Rock. Etta Candy was played by Lucy Davis. And Dr. Maru was played by Elena Anaya.
And we all saw it. Some of us saw it multiple times, but we all saw it. And before we saw it, we saw a bunch of trailers. So we're just going to get those out of the way really quick. Michelle, why don't you run down the trailers that you saw before you saw Wonder Woman?
Sure. A Mountain Between Us, Hitman's Bodyguard, Transformers, The Last Knight, I think it's called, Valerian, The New Spider-Man, Blade Runner, Atomic Blonde, and Justice League.
And Chris, what trailers did you gather up?
So sadly, no Spider-Man Homecoming. I was really geeking out for that. Didn't happen. But we did get Blade Runner 2049, Atomic Blonde, whatever that Valerian movie is that I kind of sort of want to see. I'm not 100% sure. Geostorm, which looked like total poop. Murder on the Orient Express and Transformers still exploiting my childhood.
Haley, what do you got?
I saw Atomic Blonde, Spider-Man Homecoming, Glass Castle, Blade Runner 2049, and Apocalypse Movie 2017. I mean, Geostorm.
Was that Castle trailer the movie about the family that was moving around?
Yes.
Ugh, whatever. I saw that too. I saw Blade Runner 2046. Sadly, I did not see any Spider-Man Homecoming. I did see Geostorm and it was all right. I don't can't say it was total poop like Chris did. Murder on the Orient Express, of course, that timeless story now, and it looks like it's going to be done really well. I'm not sure it's up my alley, though. Atomic Blonde, which was amazing, the action that was shown in there, and Michael Bay's exploitation continuing with Transformers, which I vowed not to see in the theater, and some scary shark movie that there is no way in Hades that I'm going to see that one either.
I got that one, too. It also looked like poop.
So, Michelle, how many times did you see the movie?
I saw it twice. I saw it Friday at 7 p.m. The audience was about half full. And then I saw it Saturday at 11 a.m. And that showing was full. And what I was really happy about is that after each showing, there was a round of applause. I didn't start it. Other people started it. So
it was my fault. Hey, Chris, did you just see this one once?
Just saw it once, went Saturday at about 3:45 is when the showtime started. It was only about half full, but bear in mind, I live in a college town and all the students are gone for the summer. So all of us townies are just now starting to come back out on the town.
Haley, are you on your fifth or sixth screening of the film?
No, I've only seen it once so far. I saw it Friday after work at like 5:30. And that I went to a theater that has assigned seating. So I know when I picked my seats, there were 4 seats left available. So that's at most how many seats were available. And I wanted to see it again yesterday, but I also wanted to spend the whole day in my pajamas, so I did not see it again yesterday.
That's a noble cause. I'm with you on that one.
I saw it last night at the Good Theater, which means I drove an hour to get there. I bought the tickets earlier on in the week because the last time I tried to do this, it was sold out on Saturday night. So when I bought the tickets, there weren't any, but I was the first one to choose, and that was Tuesday, Wednesday, something like that. But it was a completely full theater. Didn't get any applause at the end. I think there was some confusion at the end as to whether there was going to be a mid or a post-credit scene or not. I had done my research beforehand, and I knew that there was not, so I didn't bother sticking around since I had an hour drive back. But the audience was really engaged. They laughed at all the appropriate parts and they cheered at all the appropriate parts. So it was a really engaged audience. And I love seeing a movie in the theater with a great sound system and my own seat that reclines. So I will be going back to that theater.
See, I loved seeing all the people wait for the post-credits scene. I'd like USP. I did my research and knew there wasn't one. So we got up and we started leaving. I see these people giving me a dirty look. I'm like, so that's what it's like when I give people dirty looks in Marvel movies when they leave. I understand now.
Well, how many people even know the difference? Like, lay people know the difference between Marvel and DC. It's just a superhero movie.
That's true.
That they went to see. And they know that superhero movies have extra scenes.
I was listening to a live podcast yesterday, and they were completely confused. They didn't understand if there was mid or post-credit scene. They didn't understand the difference between DC and Marvel. And then one of the listeners kind of freaked out and told them what was going on. So, oh, sorry, pardon us. I think they were doing it just to get a reaction. Moving on, let's talk specifically about the movie. If you're new to the Starling Tribune, we usually cover the CW show Arrow, and we talk every single time about the main themes and plot of the specific Arrow episode. We're going to be running into that for Wonder Woman right now. So last spoiler chance, we are going to talk about the movie. Michelle, talk about the overall theme.
Well, this film is an origin story to let us know how Diana became Wonder Woman. And very much you do nothing or you do something, you know, fighting for a cause, realizing that helping people, you should be doing what you can and not judging, oh, these people deserve my help, why these people don't. You should be acknowledging that, you know, everyone is capable of good and bad and that you should believe in love and, you know, this, to see the good in people and to help them achieve that possibility.
Haley, you are the producer of The Crimson Comet, which is a podcast about the CW television show Flash. You're also my co-host over on Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. on the Marvel Universe. What did you think about the overall themes for this movie?
I thought it was awesome. That's all I have to say about this movie, is it was just amazing.
All right, Chris, did you have anything specific to say about the overall theme
overall theme. Yeah, here's how you do a superhero movie, DC Comics. This is your blueprint. How? I'm going to say something that sounds terrible. I don't mean it to. Wonder Woman probably should have been the hardest out of the big three movies to do between Batman and Superman. It probably should have been the hardest because arguably not quite as well known as the other big two guys because they've had tons of movies. They nailed it on every front. So what the heck is wrong with them that they can't pull off a Batman or a Superman movie late?
Wonder Woman single-handedly saved the DC cinematic universe.
Yeah, it sure as hell wasn't Suicide Squad.
Right. If they can continue on with this, it's going to be amazing. And if Wonder Woman doesn't get any awards out of this, so I can call it the award-winning Wonder Woman movie, DC has something wrong with their promotion because this should be an award-winning film.
Chris saying this should have been the hardest. Maybe they had a little more freedom with this one because it wasn't as tied into the universe that they're building. You know, it's taking place decades before any stories we're going to hear.
No, that's fair. I mean, I think, and we'll probably touch on it later, I think they learned a lot of lessons from the Captain America First Avenger being a period piece, and I think they improved on a lot of what Captain America had done.
I had that vibe actually myself as well, that it was done in the period piece of World War I this time.
Right.
Of course, Captain America over on the Marvel side was World War II, but I got the feeling that they were able to take a lot of liberties because it was done during World War I. And to be honest, there really isn't that cinematic knowledge of World War I as there is with World War II. There's a lot more movies about World War II, so your fan base is a little bit more intertwined with World War II than World War I. So there is that aspect to it as well. But Wonder Woman doesn't start off, of course, with World War I. It starts out with a quick current flash. I won't say flashback, but a quick scene in the current, and then it flashes back to Diana Prince as a young girl, and you get that god evolution. And from that standpoint, the animation kind of reminded me a lot of the animation that I saw in Guardians of the Galaxy 2. So I'm wondering if that's a theme right now, to do that sort of computer-based animation in flashbacks and storytelling, where you don't want to go too far in depth with the story, but you want to make sure everybody has the same background going into it, because this movie can be seen by little kids on up to senior citizens. So you never know where everybody's starting from a knowledge base. All right. So we'll jump into what we do great, which is next, the fight scenes and the stunts. Michelle, there was a first fight on the beach, wasn't there?
Yeah. So there's this great training segment, and, you know, Diana does her gauntlets and she's, you know, big release of power. And then she's standing on a cliff, and then Steve Trevor comes along and crashes into, you know, the sea, and she goes and rescues him. And because he basically was able to come through the magic shield that protects the mascara, those pursuing him, some of them got through. And so you have the Amazon warriors with their bows, their arrows, going up against these World War I soldiers with guns. And there was just, you know, seeing these women, you know, like they did these arrows into the cliff and they swung down on ropes and on horses. And then they, like, the spear, using that to get sand in people's eyes and everything. It was just amazing when she jumps off the shield and fires those three arrows. It was just, it's an amazing sequence.
Yeah, but where was the boxing glove arrow?
Wrong. No.
This is not the Green Arrow, sir. Not the Green Arrow at all. The gauntlets were amazing. The training scenes were amazing, by the way, too, with all the women out there just doing tremendous stunts. Pretty sure most of it was wire work, but that doesn't make any difference. It was great on the screen. I've got a question about the ship that went through the shield. It sank during this entire battle, but there was no indication of why. It wasn't shot. Did the shield itself damage it? I don't know.
The shield. It hit the shield, and, you know, the shield still had some power. And if you notice, it was leaning and everything once it hit. So that's why it sank.
Okay. I was watching it intently, wondering what was going on. It started leaning, and I thought we were going to get a all hands sinking scene.
I had only seen it once, but wasn't, well, no, never mind. He flew out. I was going to say, wasn't Trevor on that ship? Did he sabotage it? But no, he flew out of that base before. Forgot.
Jeez, Haley.
Sorry.
All right.
Ignore me.
Since we're ignoring you, why don't you tell us about what happened in the alley in London?
Well, Steve realizes they're being followed and he tries to hide them away in this alley, but they just ended up surrounded by bad guys in an alley. And he tries to do the chivalrous thing and, oh, get behind me. And she puts out her gauntlet and blocks the bullet, and he's like, or don't. And then there's an awesome fight scene.
There definitely was. Did anybody get the likeness between Captain Kirk of the Enterprise and Steve Trevor?
Just a little bit. He only had a few Captain Kirk moments in there.
No, what's interesting, Steve Trevor is a lot more complex than what they've done with Kirk. And kudos to Chris Pine. I have to admit, I was giving Gal Gadot a chance, you know, as Wonder Woman and everything. But I have to admit, with Chris Pine, I really have never been able to see him act beyond Kirk. And he did a really good job in this movie.
I thought so, too. But the hazard you have when he's an iconic character like Captain Kirk is even when he's not trying to be, sometimes you see those little moments that remind you. Because I love Star Trek Beyond, for instance. So when he hops on the motorcycle and you see him driving through the forest, I was kind of reminded of the dirt bike scene from Star Trek Beyond. And then the whole sneaking in, grabbing a book, and just walking out of the chemical complex. I'm like, oh, that's a total Captain Kirk move. He's just a baller right there. But no, Chris Pine was awesome as Steve Trevor.
About the motorcycles, when you're the son of the famed Chips Sergeant Cottrell, you got to know how to ride a motorcycle. I mean, Robert Pine was his dad and was the star, one of the stars on Chips. So yeah, you better hope that he knows how to ride a motorcycle. But also, he had some amazing scenes with the lasso, telling the truth, and just the jokes back and forth. It was fun seeing Chris Pine as Steve Trevor and pulling that one off. Right before the battle in the alley, though, there was that wonderful scene of Diana Prince actually suiting up, so to speak. And it was fun. I think it was done really well. And it introduced Etta Candy as well. And we'll have to talk about it a little bit later. I didn't think Etta was actually integrated into the story as much as she should have been. However, there was a lot to cover in 2 hours and 12 minutes. So you got to take what you can there. So Chris, there was this wonderful battle in No Man's Land. And what did you take from that?
Wonder Woman's a badass. And evidently her shield is made of vibranium, much like Captain America's. Because that thing took tons of bullet fire. Well, she's got a machine gun nest just drilling her shield, and I was like, man, there's not even a scratch on it. That's awesome. Themysciran metal workers. We need more of them in this world.
And all of the German soldiers will keep shooting at her, even when they're being shot at by other people.
Yes, that's true. And they don't shoot at her legs. They just keep aiming at the shield.
So a constant theme throughout this movie was back to World War One and the fact that chemical weapons were actually used in the battlefield back then. Also, Steve Trevor was using a shotgun, which are illegal on the battlefield now, but were used a lot back in World War One. So it was very time specific, and I did enjoy those little nuances that they threw in there specific to World War One versus any other war movie that we saw. But yeah, she got up there, and I did notice that there was just that one machine gun nest, but as they looked up from above, it definitely looked like there was shots coming in from the left and the right, like there was three, but maybe that was just all the bullets coming from those people on the left and the right flank.
Good pull.
Yeah. One of the things that I liked is that, you know, she's, you know, Diana is like, no, we need to help right now. And up until this point, you haven't seen her as full Wonder Woman gear. You know, like when you see her leaving Themyscira, she's got the cloak on and all that, you know, you get hints. And here she is. She takes down the hair. She goes over the cloak and it was beautiful. There's this. And then she comes up and it's one of the best hero shots that I have seen in such a long time. And the first time I watched this, this is when I lost it because, you know, I watched the TV show. I spun around as a little girl with plastic bracelets and the whole deal. And I'm like, okay, I'm seeing Wonder Woman. I think I'm going to lose it. And then the movie starts and I'm like, I'm fine. I'm like, oh, well, okay, I got a handle on this. But when you finally see her as Wonder Woman, I lost it. I started crying because I was just so happy to see Wonder Woman. And the fact that she came and she leads the charge And she's the reason why they were able to go across no man's land. And if you know anything about World War One, that was a really good depiction, them being in a trench for months and years all end. Because this is why I like the World War One setting. It is the first modern war. You know, you had horses and trucks and armored, you had tanks and you had machine guns. And it was just a really good setting and a really good depiction of what like war was like in World War One.
You bring up the iconic hero shot of Wonder Woman coming up, and I don't think we can go any further without doing justice to the casting of Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman. We saw her already on the big screen in Batman versus Superman or Dawn of Justice or whatever you want to call that debacle. But this was, as you said, her first iconic hero shot. She wasn't as big, wasn't as built when she was cast. She's put on some muscle, but she's not necessarily an Amazon. So how did you feel about her body style as Wonder Woman?
I was fine with it, because if you notice, one of the things I liked about when you saw Themyscira, you had a variety of Amazons. And I think that's one of the things I like what the film did, because some comic book versions, they almost all look the same. But when on Themyscira, you had, you know, tall, thinner ones, you had bulkier women and such. So I was fine with it. Haley, you have a wonderful Wonder Woman. For those audio listeners, Haley is like got like the Wonder Woman like jacket, and she's even got like the tiara and stuff. So what did you think, Haley?
It's a Wonder Woman onesie is what it is.
Ah.
But I wish she had been a little more muscular, but it wasn't anything that I was thinking about during the movie. So it was fine.
That's exactly where I was. I just took it on the fact that this is the Wonder Woman on the screen, and that was what I was going to go with. So I didn't have a problem with it, but just had to tip the hat to those people when she was cast that had those concerns. I don't think it was a big deal on the screen.
Same as Michelle, though. I was resisting the urge to like hop out of my seat when her theme music started playing during her charge across no man's land. Like, that was the first moment in the movie where I was like, just stupid grin plastered all across my face, ready to fist bump.
Well, and another thing, if you notice, her fighting style is a lot of like leg sweeps and flips. She's very agile. So her body type does fit that agile type of warrior
fighting style.
Yeah.
It does. And the way they sped it up and used the whip all at the same time, I didn't have a problem with it. I could see other people having a problem like, oh, it's almost animation like, but, and maybe it was, I don't know actually how they shot those action scenes, but I didn't have an issue with it.
Fighting style was great, but they have the typical problem that you see with the Zack Snyder movie where they like slow-mo scenes a little too much at times. You're like, okay. And it's a minor quibble. It's not terrible, but it's noticeable after a while. You're like, okay, you really didn't have to go to a slow-mo sweeping camera right here.
No, it was an interesting breakup to the fight in Veld, which is what I wanted to go to next, Chris. It wasn't just the fight in No Man's Land. Once they got across No Man's Land, they had to go to Veld and liberate the town from the Germans, or the Huns, I guess would be the correct vernacular for that time period, in Veld, that were basically encapsulating everybody there as slaves. And in one of the tower, not the tower scene, but in the second floor or third floor fighting scene, they broke it up with those slow motion scenes, which I think was pretty good, but maybe too much. I don't know. What did you think about the fight in Veld, Chris?
Like I was saying, it's the slow-mo. Then I'd stepped ahead of myself a little bit there. It's a great fight. It's a ton of fun. She's a total badass, bouncing through walls and throwing people around. It's just, I'm not a huge fan of constantly lots of little slow, well, not constantly, but an excessive number of the slow motion scenes. And it's not bad. It's just not my kind of thing. But the fight's awesome.
Haley, talk me through the sheer power that was the tower explosion.
Yeah, I mean, you throw a Wonder Woman at it. She was totally Hulk in this movie, by the way. Just like, you point her at the problem and get out of the way.
You definitely did. And it was nice to see Trevor use the same shield trick that he had seen on the beach as well. And it took three of them to hold up that armored door, but they did it. And yeah, she leveled the top of that church. I would say it was a church. And all the time I was thinking, oh, did you really have to level the top of the church in order to take out the sniper? But I was like, yeah, at the end of the day, who cares?
Better safe than sorry.
Yeah,
but
you also got that great shot of her, you know, like that low angle, and out of the rubble, there she is, and she's standing there.
all the shots were good. The Wonder Woman was good. And then there were a couple more battles though that we got to get through. And there was the Diana versus Ludendorff battle. Michelle, what happened with that? And do you think that she came out of that okay?
Well, she's going, okay, this Ludendorff guy has to be Ares. He's the one that's in charge. He's the one that wants this chemical weapon that can basically, you know, melt gas masks and, you know, render them ineffective and such. And Dr. Maru actually develops this gas. And when he inhales it, he's all like, you know, glowy and even leads the audience to think, oh, this must be Ares and he needs the gas to like power up. And so she, you know, goes and they had like this fight, you know, sword, and he can actually punch her and kind of hurt, and you throw stuff at her. And so this makes her even more convinced that, okay, I'm up against Ares. And then eventually, you know, she stabs him on the roof, but then like the war doesn't magically end. And she's like confused because she's like, wait, I killed Ares. Now everybody should be like not wanting to fight and it should all be done, but it's not.
And she walks away like wounded. She's mentally and spiritually wounded from that. Like she is wrong. And she just doesn't understand how she can help mankind or her being because it didn't work. She quickly finds out that it's not the case. Right, Haley?
Right. Well, a big part of the end of this movie is her coming to the realization that the world of men is not this pure, innocent, beautiful thing that she had been raised to believe, because all she knew before this started was what she had been told, which is that, you know, Zeus created mankind to be kind and wise and all these things. And it was only through Ares' corruption that they ended up like this. And she kind of comes to the realization that, you know, that's not necessarily the case.
But then she quickly meets up with Sir Patrick.
Yes.
Remus Lupin.
Yep. Anybody who has seen movies before knows, like, you don't get an actor like that to have him stay back in Britain and, you know, just kind of talk on the phone every once in a while. Like, you knew he was up to something when you saw who he was.
The moment he took that book and was like, oh, wow, this is great. I knew from that moment on that he was bad guy.
I knew as soon as I saw him, because I was like, you don't cast that guy to not use him as the bad guy.
It's like, name that tune. I could do it in three notes. I could do it two notes. I could do it before I hear the song. That was Haley right there. Kudos to Haley.
Sometimes people of caliber are willing to do a movie to give it weight and to validate it. So part of me was like, well, maybe he did this because it's Wonder Woman and he wanted to make sure people understood this is a quality movie. So I did not automatically peg him as the bad guy. I'm going to completely admit that right now. I was actually surprised that he ended up being Ares.
Well, the movies that do that are movies like Saving Private Ryan, where you had Ted Danson, which was on the screen for less than 2 minutes, but he came in to do that. But the movie was much bigger than that. You had a lot of cameos from a lot of people that came in to film that film because it was so iconic and about the D-Day invasion and everything around there, and that the production team behind it was so great. So I kind of have to side with Haley here, is that,
wait a minute, Saving Private Ryan had Steven Spielberg. So everyone's going to be like, I will walk across the screen to give somebody coffee and say a line to say I worked with Steven Spielberg. No disrespect to Patty Jenkins, but the fact that I don't really think a lot of people were unfortunately clamoring to work with her, and this had an uphill battle. You know, is this just going to be a, you know, just a throwaway movie or anything like that? So, you know, again, Steven Spielberg directs people reading the yellow pages. People are going to do it because it's Steven Spielberg.
Right. And remember, going into this, all the DC Universe movies we've gotten up to this point had been crapped all over by everybody.
Justifiably in most cases.
Yes.
Including the award-winning Suicide Squad, in my opinion.
Throw up in my mouth.
So that was the fights. They were amazing throughout. The final fight with Sir Patrick, or Ares, as we can call him now, was amazing. I mean, Wonder Woman coming to power after Steve died was just, she had rage in her, and she had to calm herself down before she took out Dr. Moreau, who I'm sure we'll see again. She just didn't come into this movie and leave without a future, basically, in the DC universe.
I prefer her other name of Dr. Poison.
Dr. Poison, yes.
That's an awesome name.
So I think we'll be seeing Dr. Poison again.
I kind of don't think so, because the rest of the movies are taking place like 100 years after this.
Yeah.
She left without an end, though. I just think it's a dangling part out there. So I think we're going to get at least a reference to her in the future.
She's a symbol of the fact that someone who basically turned to the darkness, and Diana was able to say, okay, you turned to the darkness, but you still deserve to live. I just don't deserve to take my wrath out on everybody.
All right. Well, time will tell. We'll see in 5 years, 10 years, if she comes back.
I agree with Michelle. Her point was to be the one that Wonder Woman allowed to live.
All right. Well, let's talk about Wonder Woman. Let's talk about her beginnings in Themyscira. So, Chris, what did you take away from the Island of Paradise?
Well, it's a beautiful place they went to go and film that. I mean, everything pops off a screen. Beautiful environment. What a place to grow up if you're Princess Diana, I imagine. But it's kind of nice to see that Princess Diana wants to learn to fight, even though her mom doesn't necessarily want her to. And you eventually get the payoff for that. They planted the seeds. There's a reason Hippolyta's not wanting her to be trained. What's it going to be? And we finally get the payoff at the end of the flick. But Themyscira, awesome place. They did a great job of recreating what I had seen in the comics and in the cartoons before on the big screen.
I got a poll question for you guys. When little Diana, the little baby Diana, when she's running around after she gets caught and she jumps off the side of the cliff, do you think something bad was going to happen to her unless mom caught her, or do you think she'd been okay? Chris?
I figure she'd have been all right. I mean, you can't kill the title character off in the first 10 minutes.
Well, of course, but Haley?
We're going to need another Diana.
She would have been splat unless mom caught her. Okay.
I think she was ready to parkour off of the building and stuff.
She's been watching Ninja Warrior.
Yep.
Okay, there's 2-4. Michelle?
Yeah, I figured because she was actually, if you notice, there was actually still walkway where she was going. So I figured she was going to jump, and like when she did a land and roll, that's what I figured she was going to be doing.
I thought she was going to be toast at the bottom of that ravine, personally. I thought she was going to deflect off that wall that she was headed for and then further down. So that was just me.
SP's like, I drove an hour for 10 minutes of movie and 40 minutes of previews. What the hell?
But she wasn't good. I mean, mom caught her, so it's no big deal. But, you know, hey.
No, you cut to Hippolyta talking to you. It's like, listen, I know you gave me that kid, but can I have another one? This one's broken.
I think that shows just how well mom knew her. It's like she had been through this before so many times that she was just like waiting there going, my daughter is running. Okay, she's going to do this. And it's just like, wham, catch. Like, yeah, like that's how much of a mom she is. She knew.
Mom always knows.
She did. But she didn't know specifically about what was going on in London and the fact that it was hideous. Did she, Michelle?
Well, of course, mom was really upset when Diana decides to leave. That is a change from, there's different versions, comic book versions. And, you know, Diana in the beginning thinks she's made out of clay and that Zeus just breathed life to her. But then later on, we learned that that's different. And instead of like the champion games, in order to pick the Amazon who goes, she's more of like, I have decided to go. And then she leaves. And that was a heartbreaking scene where mom is like, you know, you've been my greatest love. And today you're my greatest sorrow. And it's like, well, that's a way to send off your daughter when she's never going to be able to see you again. Like, you know, thanks for breaking my heart, kid. Bye. So, yeah. And then she, yeah. And then the way the contrast did, you know, Themyscira is bright and beautiful. And then when she wakes up in London, which is gray and dreary, it does, you know, when she says it's hideous, it's like, yeah, look where she's from.
Yeah, if all you knew was an island paradise, pretty much anything is going to be hideous in comparison, I wager.
But there's ice cream, so that's good.
And that was plucked right out of the comic and a Justice League movie. I think it was Justice League War, that scene, and it was great to see. You should be proud of your accomplishment.
Yes.
Right. So, Michelle, where do you want to go from here? You want to talk about Steve? You want to talk about the team?
You know, a lot of people might say, oh, Steve's just a love interest, but he's not. A lot of people talk about agency and how when it's the male lead and the woman's just kind of like trailing along. Here's a case of where Diana has her own agency. I am going to go to the war and take care of Ares, whether you're with me or not. And Steve is like, I'm going to find the chemical weapons and destroy that, even if you decide not to come along. And, you know, that's one of the things that I liked about it. I liked how Steve already had his motivation, that scene where he talks about his father and the watch. And, you know, here he is, he's an American, but he's a spy for the British. And when he tells Diana, I can save today, you can save the world. And that really sort of sums up, you know, who he is.
Great line, too.
I was 50-50 in the theater when I saw it, until I thought about it a little bit, that he actually died in the plane. I was like, yeah, maybe. I mean, we didn't see a body, but I think they just didn't want to show it. And he is indeed gone. Steve will not be returning. Chris Pine will not be returning to the DC universe.
Unless the Flash time traveled again, because damn it, Barry.
You have to go there. Especially after last week, Chris, you have to go there.
Look, anything's possible, man. He's always screwing up time in the TV world. Why don't they do that in the movie world now?
And at that moment in the plane, that really, Chris Pine went through all those emotions in like a minute. And just like when he realizes this is what I'm going to do and such, that was, I'm like, oh, no. But it makes sense that they went with the goddess origin for Wonder Woman. Which means she's going to live, you know, like at the end of the movie, she says like forever. And it's like, well, she is a demigoddess. So yeah, who knows how long she could live.
She hasn't aged a day, really, from the World War I, which is 100 years ago, till today.
That's just a drop in the bucket to her lifespan, probably. We don't even know how long she was on Themyscira for.
Yeah, she did grow up. I mean, she wasn't a kid forever, and she wasn't made as an adult.
Did she grow up over the course of hundreds of years? You don't know.
Yeah, because she ends up being the god killer. So, because in the story, it says, okay, so Themyscira was created to protect the god killer, so Ares wouldn't be able to get to it. So time probably passes differently there. And yeah, she could have been a kid for 100 years, you know, and then a teenager for 300 years. You know, yeah, we're not sure.
You know, they're never going to do it probably in a movie or a cartoon, but I would love for them to spend more time on Themyscira and just see what life is like there. I'm sure it's happened in the comics because you can do that kind of thing in a comic, but I would like to see a movie or TV show where they dealt with that.
I was going to say, in the comic books, they continually go back to Themyscira at least once in every iteration. So it's not something that Diana is gone forever and that she actually could come back. So in a future movie, if they ever do Wonder Woman 2 or maybe in some iteration of a team-up movie, they could end up back at Themyscira. The only problem is in most of those, Steve Trevor goes back with her, and that's just not going to happen in this case.
This is supposed to be the first of 3 Wonder Woman movies, though.
I did not know that. That is awesome. One thing that I mentioned earlier on, and I feel that right now is a good time to talk about, is Etta Candy. Now, in the comics that she is indeed a formidable character, she's got a lot of different iterations to her. More of a Diana friend than a Steve Trevor secretary. And I did mention we needed more of her, and I think I know why, because there's just too much ground to cover. But what do you think? Haley, what do you think? Do we need more of Etta?
Well, yeah, that would be great. But you can see why. If they're going to make this movie really be about Wonder Woman on the battlefield, and they're going to very quickly get her out to the front lines, that's not really where Etta Candy is going to be. That's not her place in the story. So if, you know, that's where they're going to take the story. Ed is going to get left in London, and that doesn't leave a lot for her to do.
Did you see her shudder when they mentioned the word run? And I took that as she was physically revolted by the idea of running, not that she was revolted against running the operation.
I mean, I think they had to do a good job of balancing all these characters. You got to think, how long of a time frame does this movie take place over? A few days, a week maybe at the most? I mean, they condensed a lot of stuff. stuff time-wise, even from a short time period, into one movie.
I would have been okay if they didn't use Etta Candy in this movie and they just created a new character to be Steve's secretary, because now we're not going to get Etta Candy ever again. And it would have been nice if in the sequel, we would have gotten an Etta Candy and then there would have been more interaction with Diana, because that's Etta Candy is Wonder Woman's BFF, basically. And all, like when she said, you know, I kind of like a little fisticuffs. Well, that's Etta Candy. She ended up being her own. She's human and she's her own hero. And she literally, you know, just boxes, but she's a lot of fun. And because she wasn't Diana's BFF in the movie, it's like, oh man. And because it's World War One, we're not going to get, unless Etta has a great, great grandchild and she just happens to be exactly like her great, great, great grandmother, we're not really going to get Etta Candy.
Yeah. Don't discount the fact you could have another Peggy Carter or Sharon Carter crossover kind of thing like they did in Captain America.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Or the next Wonder Woman movie could take place like during World War II and Etta Candy is now Wonder Woman's secretary.
See, that would be cool, but all the stories I've seen have said that the next Wonder Woman movie is going to take place in present day.
They're not doing the X-Men thing of decade by decade?
That is correct. The articles I'd read online had all said next Wonder Woman would be present day. So presumably whatever happens in Justice League and Aquaman will shape the world that's going to appear in Wonder Woman's sequel, whatever they end up calling that.
That's unfortunate because I think in the Rebirth iteration of Wonder Woman, Etta Candy is a badass DEO agent underneath the wall. So we're not going to get that. And that's unfortunate, but it's what the DC universe gave us. So, okay, we'll take it and move on. Are there any other character moments that you guys want to talk about? You want to talk about the team, Chris?
We can talk about them a little bit. They got a lot of depth in that team for the short time in comparison they are on screen. Like, you feel for every one of them, especially Charlie, the sharpshooter who can't take a shot for a while there, and then the sharpshooter who sees the miraculous things that is Diana basically laying waste to the battlefield and giving people hope, which gives him his hope again, so he starts singing again for the first time in years. Very powerful moment there.
It is, and it was great to see the team out there and interacting and really not just being sidekicks, but actually being main players. I mean, there were sidekicks, but they were being main players along the way as well. And they all agreed to continue on, even though they were not getting paid anymore. Haley, any last character moments?
One, do you think that there was the tall brunette woman that was always with Antiope? Was that supposed to be like her wife?
I think so, because the reaction... Okay. That she had, I'm like going, oh, there's the girlfriend, wife.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. It's like, there it is.
I wasn't going to go there, but yeah, that's what I assumed as it was going on. I mean, Steve Trevor brought it up. You don't know what marriage is? Well, this is what marriage is. So he had to tell her. So there you go. All right. Michelle, last character moments.
Yeah, I really did like the team, and it showed like Diana, like when she, you know, she kind of judged people. It's like, oh, this is a smuggler. And then when she starts talking to Chief, it's like, you know, I'm here because I'm free, and you know, my lands have been taken. It's like, oh, who took your lands? And he points over to Steve Trevor. It's like his people. And then Samir, who can talk his way, you know, he could probably sell Eskimos an igloo or something. Like, it, you know, he really could just talk his way. And he had this great moment where he says, you know, we can't always be who we want to be. Sometimes, you know, we stumble and things happen. And I also like the fact that Diana, you know, she's a general. She can fight, goddess or not goddess. She knows how to win. She can fight, you know, powers or no powers. But she wasn't versed in modern warfare when you have espionage and when you need to hide and when you need to let the so-called enemy go in order to find the gas. Because, you know, at the gala, I loved how she, you know, had the sword in her back. She just wanted to go up and, you know, cut off the head. And Steve Trevor's like, you can't do that here. You can't do that.
It was an amazing shot with her and the sword in the back of the dress. It just fit perfectly. And you knew she wanted to rip that out and start tearing up, but she didn't. And that led to consternation between the two as well. But it was an amazing shot with her with the sword. I was like, oh, yeah. So that was cool. All right. So we're going to take one more round of everybody. Last thoughts about the plots, any plot points that we missed, and then final thoughts about the movie. Haley.
Well, there was that brown chicken, brown cow scene in Veld.
Yes, in room 23.
Nothing really else to say about it. That happened.
I was amazed that it was actually there because, you know, the town was...
It felt a little rushed.
Yeah. Well, the town was right next to the war zone, and then, you know, you still had a Class A hotel room to go brown chicken, brown cow in there. But yeah, there you go. And then last thoughts about the movie.
It was amazing. Amazing. I can't wait to see it again tonight.
Have fun there. Chris.
So I can't really think of any other plot points I wanted to bring up, but overall, really good movie. I'm not sure where it ranks in all the superhero movies and stuff like that, because I try not to rank movies immediately after seeing them. But the way I would describe it is I came in there, I enjoyed myself, and you know what? I would go see that movie again.
Indeed. I will be buying this on the Blu-ray/DVD/digital combo. Michelle will give you the last word.
I am just so happy that it didn't suck. I'm just so happy that it's a good movie. It's just a good movie. And during the first screening, my theater actually kept the lights down for some reason. It made everybody think there was a scene because they didn't turn on the lights. But I'm glad they did, because the first time I saw this, I was just crying because I was so happy at how just tight it is. It had humor, it had heart, it had action, well-paced and everything. And just to see one of my heroes on screen done really well. Thank you, Patty Jenkins. Thank you, Gal Gadot. Thank you, DC and everything. I'm just so happy. It's good.
Let's just hope they don't screw it all up with Justice League.
I know. Oh,
because I'm a positive person by nature.
I know. I'm cringing at that. So we'll see what happens. And I got to throw a bone to Geoff Johns, because I think bringing him on really steered this in the right direction. Don't know if this was the original direction or not, but I'm sure having him around gave the film the extra oomph it needed to be as good as it was. So congratulations, and definitely one of the biggest female-led superhero success movies out there today. And can't wait to see what the final box office numbers are. So, Michelle, if you were a regular listener of the Starling Tribune, we have another episode coming up this week.
Yes, we do. In this week's episode, we're going to be continuing our watch of Legends of Tomorrow. We're going to be discussing The Chicago Way, which is the 8th episode of season 2. It originally aired Thursday, December 8, 2016. And the legends track a time aberration to 1927 Chicago and realize they've been set up by Eobo Thawne, Damien Dark, and the newest member of the Legion of Doom, Malcolm Merlyn. Directed by Ralph Hemmecker and writers Sarah Nicole Jones and Ray Utarnichet.
Woohoo! Can't wait for that. Now we're going to delve into some news and definitely some box office numbers. Straight from the Starling Tribune news desk, we're going to run into some box office numbers right now. Remember, we said that this film took about $150 million to make. And Michelle, what kind of money has it made so far?
Well, domestically so far, $100.5 million. They said that it could easily maybe go to $101. So this outing domestically easily beats the opening of the first Iron Man, which was $98.6 million. But she floats under the openings of such single, not team superhero origin features as Deadpool, which was $132.5 million, Man of Steel, which was $116.6 million, and Spider-Man at $114.8 million. Currently, Wonder Woman is the sixth best domestic opening at the June box office and second best for WB and DC after Man of Steel. So domestically, she's a hit.
She's going to have a tough time against Transformers just because of the international box office, but I would love to see Wonder Woman do better than Transformers. That's because I have a thing against Michael Bay for ruining my childhood.
Well, and there's a trend right now. Domestic audiences are getting tired of these constant long series of things. Look at the Pirates movie. Its numbers were not what they expected and had like a massive drop this week. So don't be shocked if Transformers doesn't do as well as you might think it would.
And I like that Wonder Woman was just a complete movie.
It was, end to end.
The last Transformers movie did not do well domestically. The last few have not done well domestically. It's just that they're doing so well overseas that they can keep making them.
Right.
And I still refuse to see this one in the theaters.
Well, so continuing with numbers, offshore, so globally, she's doing $223 million global. So in her maiden outing, Wonder Woman dominated the international box office with $122.5 million on 34,300 screens in 55 markets. And that's without such major hubs as France, Germany, and others. In overall terms overseas, the movie outperforms such key superhero comps as Thor 1 and 2, Iron Man 1 and 2, Guardians of the Galaxy 1 and 2, Doctor Strange, Captain America 1 and 2, Man of Steel, and Ant-Man. So, doing pretty well.
Mm-hmm. We will keep track of the box office in the future weeks of the Starling Tribune. So Chris, we are part of this wonderful network, which if you haven't gotten enough of Wonder Woman coverage, there will be at least, and we were discussing this pre-show, three other shows doing their takes on Wonder Woman. But in case somebody wanted to delve outside of the Wonder Woman or DC Universe, what else is there on the network for our listener to go check out?
So like SP's mentioned, there's a lot of different shows in the network, some of them focusing on shows like The Flash and Arrow or general geek culture, things like that. But each week we try to focus on one specific show or a different specific show. And we know we've tossed some Marvel teases in here in a few places. So hey, you guys should go check out the Marvel Podcast Network. Go check out episode 177 of Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. where they talk about the Luke Cage episode DWYCK. And this Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., director Stargate Pioneer and Agent Haley discuss the Luke Cage episode DWYCK and watch the rise of Diamondback and his criminal mastermind, Mariah. And you can check that out over at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. is there and a variety of other shows that make up the entire network.
Thank you very much, Chris. And if somebody wanted to check out our live show, where would they come to?
Sure, just head on over to geeks.live each week when we record live, and if there's not even a live show going at the time, go check out the calendar on the bottom of the page. It'll tell you when all of the live shows are taking place.
And usually, we will be changing this later on this summer, but usually we are live on Thursdays at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. And don't forget, if you liked us, to rate, review, and subscribe us on iTunes. That 5-star review would be great. And thank you very much to our production team behind the camera and microphone, including our video editor, Chris.
You can find all of our contact information on the Gunna Geek Network at GunnaGeekNetwork.com, where you can check out our forums and other shows. If you want to share your thoughts, head on over to our Facebook page, send in a tweet, or you can call us at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283. Well, that was a great episode. Thank you, Haley, for guesting today. So this wraps it up. Any last words before we sign off? At Stargate Pioneer.
Hashtag all 12 volumes.
At the Chris Farrell.
Hashtag Remus Lupin.
At Awesome Engineering Girl.
Hashtag Wonder Woman.
I am at Michelle Ely signing off with hashtag I'm just so happy. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at Incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.